Episode 16, A Sign of Approval. Christmas Eve 2022, nearly 5 months after we first met, was the first time Debbie stayed at my house. That evening, I was in the kitchen preparing some food for Christmas Day, while Debbie was sat in the lounge. I was working on one side of the kitchen, and when I turned around, I found one of the wall cupboard doors was open. It was the cupboard where I kept the dry spices, Tupperware and food bags. I hadn't been in that cupboard as far as I knew, so I closed the door, turned around and carried on with what I was doing. Shortly after, I turned around again to find the same cupboard door was open. I walked up to the cupboard and stood there looking at it. I was sure I'd closed it once and hadn't used the cupboard for anything else. I closed the door and mentally noted that I had closed it. I then went and poked my head around the lounge door to see if Debbie was okay. I walked back into the kitchen to find the same cupboard door open again. I now knew that this was Julie leaving me a sign. It was a peaceful sign, and a sign to say that she was okay with Debbie being in the house. This wasn't the first time that Julie had used the cupboard door as a sign. The last time I actually heard the door swing open when my back was turned. That time it was to answer a question that had arisen that evening. But the cupboard door incident on Christmas Eve was to be the last sign I'd receive for the next 10 months. It was a clear yet peaceful sign. It was so obvious. She made it obvious so it couldn't be mistaken. If the cupboard door opened once or even twice, then that could be accepted as human error, but not 3 times, especially after leaving the kitchen then returning to find it open again. The signs from Julie were most frequent in the months just after her death. This is when I needed her most. This is when I was really hurting, trying to survive, starting to recover. She wanted to help me, but I think she also wanted me to recover so I could lead our family again. As the months went on, the signs eased off, as I started to heal and get more used to my new life. I remember when I went to Julie's works and spoke to Nikki. She said, "One day you'll feel guilty because you've realised that you hadn't thought of Julie that day." I thought that would never happen, and it hasn't up to now, but I know it will do. I'm not worried when that day comes. I'm getting more and more used to life without Julie. It's something I never thought I would do, but I am. I'm getting very used to her not being here. In fact, I would find it very odd if she was here. Eventually there will come a day when I'm busy enough that I don't think of her, just as Nikki had said. When that day comes, I won't feel guilty. I think I'll feel relief. Relieved that I've recovered enough that I don't feel an element of guilt. That I'm happy and self-reliant. That I've survived and moved forward in such a way that my new life feels totally natural. That I found a new partner and I found happiness with her. And that I only think of Julie with fond memories and happiness. But more than anything, that I'm writing this podcast in the hope that this will help people gain strength and knowledge to be able to get their lives back on track, whether with a new partner, a companion, or alone. Like anything in life, when a thought or memory that provokes an emotion is fresh or raw, it's constantly at the forefront of your mind. But as time goes by, it slowly eases until it becomes secondary to a new emotion. But that's only if you allow it to. Does the same thing happen when you die? You're entering a new world, a world that's totally different to the one you've left. A place you weren't prepared for, because nobody truly knows what the other side is like. You're living in a new world with family you haven't seen for such a long time. So as time goes by, is the same thing happening to Julie as what will happen to me? Do the signs dry up because Julie starts to have days when she doesn't think of me? Or is it just that she feels I don't need her help anymore? I know I'm always in her life as she's in mine, but that doesn't mean that either of us has to think about each other every minute of every day. I think some people who have lost a loved one get confused. They feel guilty if they're not constantly thinking about them, as if they're being disrespectful. Again, this is a pure sign of not doing what your deceased loved ones want you to do, to recover, to move forward, to live again. You're mentally dressed in black. You feel disrespectful if you're enjoying yourself or feeling happy. The deceased want you to live and laugh again. They send you the signs to help you, especially in the infancy of your mourning. It's like a young child learning to walk. You hold its hand to help it, to stop it falling so it doesn't get hurt. But then one day, you let go of that hand and never hold it again. You've helped that child to walk, and you'll always be there if it falls, but now, you only watch from a distance as it walks alone. We look at the signs that the deceased conjure up. To us they seem impossible, yet on earth we do things that seem impossible at times. Do the spirits replicate our lives, but with tools that they can control and we can't? If somebody can do something that you can't, it's impressive, maybe amazing or even magical in your eyes, like a musician, a sports person or an artist. The spirits do things that seem magical, but does it only seem that way because we're unable to do them? Or can we do them? The spirits are experts at manipulating nature. The robin is Britain's spiritual bird. The cardinal is North America's. When the spirits send these birds to us as signs, have they instructed the birds to go on that errand? Or has the spirit disguised themselves as the bird? Though both sound either magical to the believer or preposterous to the skeptic, both actions are performed on earth in a way. For maybe thousands of years we've trained homing pigeons to deliver a message and then return home. And when it comes to disguise, you only have to look at the chameleon who changes colour to suit its environment. Or more impressively, the mimic octopus, who can not only change its colour, but also its shape and texture of its skin to disguise itself. We recognise the homing pigeon along with the chameleon and the octopus as part of life, so we marvel at the magic of nature. Yet because we can't see the spirit or have proof that it exists, we therefore see the messages the robin or cardinal bring as farcical. The amount of effort and energy that the spirits use to try and help us in life is all for nothing if you refuse to believe. In fact, at times, it's worse than that, as certain individuals scoff at such a suggestion. They're scoffing at the attempt by their deceased loved ones to say hello, to tell you that they're okay, or to try and help you. The energy that it takes the spirit to create these signs are all in vain. It's like the deceased are ringing your mobile phone. You see the number but refuse to answer it. That, of course, is our choice. That's up to us. We've all been given the ability to choose. That's what makes us all different, and that's what makes the human race interesting. We're not robots. We're not programmed. But don't be scared what others might think. You don't have to follow the flock. Just open your eyes and mind and see where it takes you. It's late February now, and it's coming up to my birthday, so we're off to Drumnadrochit. Debbie is really excited. It's crazy seeing a 61-year-old so giddy, but lovely at the same time. This is our first hiking holiday, and a trip to my spiritual home. I think back to my first trip there 3 months after Julie died. I think about the wooden heart that Rob the funeral director gave me, with Julie's pictures and ashes inside. I can't tell you how much I loved that heart, how much it helped me. It's one of the greatest gifts I've ever received. If I went away anywhere, it came with me. I didn't want to leave it at home, but then I was scared I'd lose it or forget to bring it back with me. I just needed it near me. It was probably the most precious item I owned at that time. 17 months after receiving it, it sits on my bedside cabinet, and that's where it stays. I like to open it from time to time, but it's now a reminder of the love and kindness that Rob showed me, more than a memento of Julie. I've healed enough so I don't need to carry a part of Julie around with me anymore. It's not a comfort blanket now. It's a marker of how far I've come, how much I've recovered, who I was then and who I am now. It sits on my bedside cabinet as a symbol, the same way that my wedding ring sits on the ring finger on my right hand. It says, "I'll never forget you, but that was my life then and this is my life now. I've not moved on and forgotten you, I've moved forward whilst remembering you." The 7-hour drive to Loch Ness seems to fly by. Debbie is such a good passenger. She just loves being out and about and has a natural excitement about seeing new places. She's very open-minded regarding seeing and trying new things. For me, it's great having a relaxed passenger whilst driving. Before Julie's brain tumour, she had no problem travelling, but after the operation, she became an extremely nervous passenger, which made driving any distance with her a nightmare. I'd had 16 years of that, so it's nice to be able to just relax and enjoy the journey. It's something that I don't have to worry about anymore, and something I don't have to plan for. The last 30 minutes of the journey is a real eye-opener for Debbie, as the road hugs Loch Ness. This is the first loch she's ever seen, and it's quite magnificent in truth. We reach the apartment and Debbie thinks the same as the rest of us, it feels like home. We do the same walks as I've done before, plus a new one on the southeast side of the loch, where the drive takes you over the highest point. Debbie is in awe of the beauty, she's never seen anything like this before. I keep saying, wait until you go to Skye, you'll love it there. Her thoughts on the area are so refreshing for me to hear. My mind jumps back to Skye while climbing Glamic. The hope that one day I'd meet somebody who sees the rough and rugged beauty of Scotland the way I did and allows their mind to become free while engrossed with the magic on offer. Last year when I came here with the kids at exactly the same time, it snowed and was cold. But this year, it's the most beautiful weather. It's as if God is saying, Debbie, you've waited all your life for this moment, now I'm going to show it you in its full glory. The day we went to the castle on the shores of the loch was the most beautiful day you could ever imagine to look out on that landscape. We sat on the small beach at the foot of the castle as the water slowly washed ashore, totally and utterly idyllic. It was incredible that it was still the end of February. The trip to Scotland was amazing, and we're off to Poland, Turkey, America and Hungary this year. I feel blessed that I'm able to go on these trips, but I'm making the most of life. I'm not hanging about. After losing Julie so suddenly, I'm taking nothing for granted. Anything could happen at any time, and there's no point being the richest man in the graveyard. I earn it, then I spend it. As long as I die with a tenner in my pocket, then that's fine. I also have somebody to enjoy these trips with now. I've turned this misery full circle into something that I could never imagine would happen during my darkest hour. But it can. Anything is possible if you're positive. If you don't feel sorry for yourself and if you realise that life is for living. Nobody worries about me anymore. That means my family and friends can just get on with their lives and that's a massive relief to me. The last thing I want to be is a burden. That's such an ugly thought. After meeting Debbie, I know most people are truly happy for me. That surprises me, but I've seen the joy on their faces when I inform them, so I know it's genuine. It was like they were relieved that I had somebody new in my life. I also know others find it weird that I'm with somebody else after only ever seeing me with Julie, but that's only natural. I still find it a bit weird to be truthful. I know Julie's happy for me though. I know that girl far too well and if she wasn't happy then she'd let me know. My son and daughter have really moved forward since Julie died and are doing so well in life. There's a real spring in everybody's step. I don't want us to sound like the Waltons but we're such a happy little unit. We have such a laugh, we're all great friends and can talk about anything. It's definitely not I'm the father and you're my children situation. And my granddaughter's arrival has added something really special. Debbie just fits into the family as if she's always been there. She definitely brings something to the party. I couldn't ask for a better outcome to the misery that we all had to endure. But make no mistake about it, this hasn't been easy. It's not come naturally, and we've all had to dig deep and stick together. But the most satisfying thing is, I know Julie will be so proud of us all. I appreciate the help she's given me. I've had over 25 signs from her. Without that help, I know I would have survived. But would I have recovered the way I have done? Disputable. As time goes by, I feel more and more relaxed with the predicament I found myself in. As I write this podcast, I realise how I feel now and remember just how I felt then, what's actually happened and how I'm now totally comfortable with it. How I look at death and know that one day it'll happen to me. I'm at total ease with that thought. It doesn't faze me in the slightest. I don't feel scared at the thought of leaving my children behind. I know they're strong enough to handle it. And if they die first, I know I'm strong enough to handle it. I'll have the saving grace that they're back with their mum, and their time on earth was a good one filled with love and laughter. But most importantly, I know I'll see them again. I'm trying to teach Debbie about the importance of accepting death, to be prepared for it, not to bury her head in the sand and refuse to think that it could happen, just because that thought upsets her. If I die, she needs to look back at the opportunity that was given to the both of us, the chance to be together and experience the things we have. Neither of us ever thought that would happen, but it did. But it's inevitable that one of us will go first and leave the other behind, as will happen to every couple. One of you will be left to pick up the pieces. One of you will be left alone. Many people have said to me, I couldn't do what you've done, I'd crumble. Of course you could. You're stronger than you think, but I've written this podcast so you're prepared. So if you're put in the position I was put in, you know what to do. You can take advice from somebody who's been there, because unless you've been there, you wouldn't have a clue about the way you feel. The mental state that you're left in, the absolute devastation and heartbreak that takes over your life, the confusion and sorrow, the loneliness and isolation of being left alone. The life sentence before meeting your loved one again. Debbie and I are now enjoying life to the full, and I have no doubt that our relationship will continue until death do us part. And when that happens, one of us will be left alone. And if it's me, then I will look back and thank the good Lord that he gave me a second life with such an amazing and loving person. There'll be little to be sad about, but plenty to be joyful. We both found each other just when we needed to, and then truly lived again. I now look back on my darkest days and smile. That stain of guilt on my favourite piece of clothing is gone. I only think of Julie with happiness. I know I'll see her again, but I have unfinished business on earth and somebody new to care for. I've recovered as much as I possibly could do and found my way to my next stage in life. A stage where I look forward to life possibly more than I ever have done. The wisdom I've gained has been added to the wisdom I had, and I'm as happy as I've ever been. Life is life, and life is for living, so go out there and live it. Thanks for listening. Family and friends, we all know someone who's struggling, who's lost their way, who can't find the light. We can help give them their lives back. Sometimes it just takes one word that suddenly makes sense to someone in need. But they can't be helped if we don't spread the word, if they don't know about Survive and Thrive podcasts. If you have time to leave a review on my website, surviveandthrivepodcast.co.uk, then not only will that be truly appreciated by myself, but it will help give confidence to somebody looking for help. Something you might say could mean so much. What you might class as a throwaway comment could be a life-changing moment to somebody else. Let's give them their lives back, because remember, Life is not a dress rehearsal, so go out there and make the most of it. But do it in the right way by thinking of others first. Until next time, take care and God bless.